Hello, everyone. My name is Hinu Josephine Taran, and I'm your host for today's episode of From Here with a View, a We Are the Seeds Philadelphia podcast. Today, our guest we have is Zahn McLarnon. Welcome. We're really, really happy to have Zahn with us today. As I'm sure a lot of you who are viewing this today know, Zahn is an award-winning film and television actor who's appeared in over 90 films and television productions. He's known for his role as Hanzi Dent in the second installment of Fargo, his reoccurring role of Akecheta on HBO's award-winning series Westworld, and for his portrayal of Officer Mathis on the television series Longmire. Zahn is also a series regular on the National Geographic's Barkskins, starring opposite Marcia Gay Harden and David Thewlis, and on the AMC show The Sun. McLarnon co-starred in the crime thriller The Silencing and in the Stephen King film Dr. Sleep, which is one of my personal favorites, and on the award-winning FX series Reservation Dogs. Currently, McLarnon is starring in and is an executive producer for the AMC series Dark Winds. It was released on June 12th. So thank you very much for being with us here today, Zahn. We're very excited to have you. He's been doing a lot of big interviews. He just did one with The Hollywood Reporter, which is pretty big for us. And right now he has Dark Winds out, which I think is a really big deal for a lot of us, and a lot of people have been tuning in. So how are you feeling today, Zahn?
Good. It's good to be here. I appreciate you guys asking me to come on.
Yes, yes. We're just reminiscing about one time when I met Zahn in this little town in Ontario called Sudbury, and that was the first and only time I'd ever met Zahn. And so here we are again. So it's a small world out here. Zahn is one of me and my husband's favorite reoccurring characters on Reservation Dogs and in Dark Winds. We're like super excited whenever we see him in something. So let's get right into it. So I think let's start with what was kind of your introduction or your inspiration into the industry?
You know, I grew up in Montana, Wyoming, and Nebraska, and I was in my early 20s, and I had done some drama in high school, but I kind of did it because it was an extra credit kind of thing, and there were, you know, it seemed like an easy class to take, and I wasn't really interested in high school. I was a little bit too shy, I think, to try to audition for any of the plays or, you know, it was like theater kids, you know, back in high school. And I thought I was a little bit too cool for that, even though I was really shy. And I still was hanging out with a kind of a different crowd, and I was just too cool. So I had, in my early 20s, I was kind of trying to figure out what I wanted to do for the rest of my life. And I saw a audition for a play called Jesus Christ Superstar, and that was in across the river from where I lived in Iowa. And you know, I loved the play, and I grew up around with the play, and you know, I knew all the lyrics to the play, and my dad turned me on to it when I was a kid. And you know, I went and auditioned, and I had to sing in front of a bunch of people, which I can't sing at all, but I was lucky enough to get a part as one of the apostles in Jesus Christ Superstar. I think they only picked me because I had long hair and I had brown skin. I'm serious. I think that's the only reason that they really chose me. They wanted to add color to their local community theater. And then, you know, in the 70s, when Jesus Christ Superstar came out, most everybody had long hair, and et cetera. And there was a lot of ethnic groups in the movie. And because I can't sing and I couldn't act, but I auditioned anyway, and I took a risk, and they hired me to play an apostle. And, you know, I kind of fell in love with the whole process of being up on stage and in the rehearsals. And even though I didn't have a lead role in it, and I didn't have any solos or anything like that, I'm lucky I didn't have any solos because I can't sing again. But, you know, I was in the choir, and I had to dance, and I had fun. You know, it got me out of myself a little bit, and kind of eased the shyness that I had. And I liked the people in the play, and I had a lot of fun, and it just became interesting after that. And what I did was in Nebraska, they had a little place called Talent Pool, and it was a local like agency kind of, and I went and met with them, and I started auditioning for local non-union commercials in Nebraska. And I think because of my ethnicity, you know, I'm kind of an ambiguous looking character. You don't know what I am, Native, Filipino, Hawaiian, whatever, Mexican, whatever it may be. I started getting jobs doing local commercials, and it paid me pretty good money. What I was great money to me back in my early 20s. And I was like, oh, this is fun. And I started researching a little bit about what was going on in Los Angeles as far as the community, Native community, and actors. And, you know, I found a thing called the American Indian Registry of Performing Arts. And I did a bunch of pictures, and this was in the early 90s. And I sent them out to them, and they took a look at them, and they said, yeah, if you come out here, we'll try to set you up with auditions and stuff like that. And I packed my bags and, you know, got on a plane and moved to Los Angeles. And that was the beginning of my career.
That's awesome. All starting with Jesus Christ Superstar, right? Mm-hmm. From there. Yeah. That's pretty cool. I feel like a lot of people start with musicals. It's like the hardest thing to do. And then it's like, boom, you're in it, right? It's like, what could be harder after this? Yeah, that's really cool to hear. And so since then, you really kind of become a fixture and regular within, I guess, the Native television and film community. So, well, I guess this is a little bit of like getting into what your methods are and how you do stuff. And for all of us curious performers and actors out there, how would you say, well, what is your process for breaking down a role when you get a script at first? I always love to hear people's processes. And, you know, like if you're handed a script, this is your role. What does that breakdown look like for you?
So as far as my process goes, I don't have much of a process, to be honest with you. I memorize my lines. A lot of how I work is instinctual. Memorize lines. I put the work in, get off book, show up, and try to tell the truth. Try to be honest as possible with that dialogue. I do some backstory stuff if it's a big part, if it's a full script, breakdown of character, the intentions, the, you know, what I'm doing in the scene, my objective, the relationships with the other characters. But most of it is really instinctual. You know, it's usually on the page if it's good writing. It's right there in front of you. All you have to do is show up and try to tell the truth. I guess that's the only way I could put it. So, you know, if it's, every character that I do is me. So I'm bringing my own life experiences, my own pain, my own tragedies, happiness. I've done sense memory work before as well. I mean, it just depends on the character in the scene. I mean, I played a drunk in a film, and I used the smell of the alcohol. I don't drink personally, so I just use the smell of the alcohol I know what drinking's like, believe me. I used to drink a lot. But I use those, the sense memory kind of stuff as well. I've done that. Just all depends on what the character is and what the scenes are and, you know, what the story is. But you hope that it's right there on the page for you. So you don't have all the heavy lifting is right there in the dialogue and the writers, how he wrote the character.
Yeah, I love to hear that because so often that's kind of what, you know, I mean, as far as my background, that a lot of the answers to your questions are in there, mm-hmm. right? And you just are searching and searching. And sometimes you find that within the memorizing, right? The repetitiveness of that. And I also think, I like that you said that it's always you. Mm-hmm. Because I think, you know, for a long time when I was a younger actor in the beginning, I would feel like, but this isn't me. But it's, you know, it's that's a really hard balance, I feel, to find when you realize that it's always you. Never, you know what I mean? It's never real. How could it be something that you aren't at all? Right. So I really love that you said that. And yeah, thank you it's not a secret process, but it's definitely a process. Sounds like it is something.
Yeah, it is something. I think everybody has their own process, but a lot of it is just kind of instinctual for me, if that makes sense.
No, that makes a lot of sense. I really appreciate you saying that. That's like acting like gold right there. Yeah. So I think, you know, when we're breaking down these characters and we're breaking down roles and breaking down scripts, right? It's like that's the process for the character, for the project that you're actually working on. And then there's a whole nother entity within the industry, which is casting. Mm-hmm. And how you approach casting and how you approach auditions, right? Mm-hmm. Which can sometimes be very different, right? Mm-hmm. So what does that process look like for you? And I guess what would your advice be to aspiring actors who are working to really figure it out? Let's say that in quotations, like figuring it out within casting and auditions.
My process, again, is just memorizing the lines, being off book. Don't walk into an audition unless you're off book. For me, personally, that's how I do it. Nowadays, it's more, we don't go on auditions so much anymore. It's self-tapes. And I love self-tapes because I spend a lot of time on them. I shoot little mini movies when I do a self-tape. Depends on where the scene is. If I'm in a car, I'll shoot it in the car. Some casting directors don't like that, and I understand why they don't like it now more that being an EP on a show and watching different tapes, watching all the casting tapes that come in, you kind of want stationary, good lighting. You want to see what's going on in the eyes of the character. But I've had a lot of success at, you know, kind of making mini movies and doing them the way I want to do them instead of the standard kind of cliche in front of the camera process. But, to each his own. I don't recommend that to everybody. I would start off with just sitting in front of the camera, good lighting and saying the dialogue, but definitely being off book. You know, I think that's really important. It gives the opportunity for the casting person, the producers, to be able to see what you might bring to that scene without getting pulled out of that scene with you looking at your dialogue and going back up. And some actors do that. And I'll be honest with you, it pulls me out as a producer, pulls me out of the scene. And I like to see somebody that comes into those auditions prepared and know what they're going to kind of bring to the set, a version of it at least. And, you know, it shows their chops and what they could bring to the character as well.
Yeah, thank you. Preparation. You guys heard it here first. Yep. Be prepared.
Prep. Yeah, prep.
And that's a big part of it, right? Mm-hmm. And so going into some of the projects that you've been working on lately, kind of in a time right now where, well, you are, I would consider you one of the leading actors right now in this time and presence that we're in. You're kind of at the helm of Native representation in television right now. Mm-hmm. And so, I would say so. So what kind of, what do you believe is kind of grasp the interest of the public in Native stories, right? And then also what kind of Native stories and future projects are you hoping to see out of this?
So I do take that weight on my shoulders pretty seriously. I mean, it's there. I know it's there just because for the fact that I continue to work as a Native actor and I'm getting quite a few jobs. I take the responsibility seriously. As far as the work goes and putting in the work. So my hopes are, you know, we have a few shows on American TV right now, Rutherford Falls, Reservation Dogs, and now Dark Winds. And what I hope to see come from these shows being on is obviously the representation of Native Americans in media. And I think it's a pretty unique time for us. And I hope that these shows just keep opening the door more and more for future generations, for not just people in front of the camera, but behind the camera, producers, writers, and crew as well. And I hope that these shows, as well as the shows up in Canada, because you guys have quite a few shows up there, that just keep opening the door for us all and giving all of us more opportunity. Again, it's quite a unique time, and I'm glad that that I stuck around this business for so long to see it happening. And it's very exciting to watch all my friends get development deals and are writing on different shows, and the new actors are coming up, and directors and producers. And I think we need a little bit more as far as getting more executives into the networks. There's a few, but not enough. And we have, we're it's a unique time, but I think there's quite a lot more work to be done. And I hope that that we keep pushing and we all jump on this vehicle together, be a family, and kind of support each other, and continue on down this road. What I would like to see, I guess I kind of answered it, is just seeing more opportunities for more Native people. So I think we have to obviously tell our own stories. That's what it comes down to, telling our own stories. And, you know, Dark Winds is written by Tony Hillerman, who was a white author who wrote mystery series of books about two Navajo cops, about one at first, Jim Chee, and then he adapted it to Joe Leaphorn and a female cop named Bernadette. And what we're doing with Dark Winds is we're just trying to recontextualize it a little bit differently by hiring all Native writers, not all Native writers, but a Native writing room. Last year we had 5 Native writers and 1 showrunner. And so we tried to recontextualize what Tony had done and just kind of put it in our own perspective. And I think that's really important, that we just tell our own stories. And we've got such a deep, you know, well of stories within our communities. And it's interesting that people have been hungry for it. They just never had a chance to see it. You know, it starts off with some shows up in Canada and down here that have been, have Native characters in it. And we've always had a really good response. I think the appetite was there. We just finally are getting a larger platform to do these things. Now we're getting good ratings. I mean, I think the streaming service on Hulu in Indian Country, the Midwest, here in the United States, Nebraska, South Dakota, Oklahoma, you know, North Dakota, Montana, Wyoming, streaming services for Hulu, the subscriptions went up quite a bit just when Reservation Dogs come up. So there's a market out there and people are watching these things. We're getting 1.2 million viewers. You know, we're getting good numbers. And I think that people have been hungry for this for a long time. And they want to see different stories. They want to see, and we have such unique stories. And I think people are really opening up to it. Well, I can get long-winded sometimes, can I?
No, it's no problem. That's what we want. Please, please. I love it. No, definitely. I totally agree with everything that you're saying. And I love that, yeah, we are going to continue to try to push these boundaries and not just stay and settle into what we have and continue to try to push for more executives and more producers. And it's a really wonderful time right now. And it's exciting. I think it's going to be an exciting next couple of years, right?
Yeah.
So you're also, you're basically, or what I would consider, I'll say it on the record, is that you're Indian Country's beloved resident Indian cop slash uncle, right? You have Reservation Dogs as well as Dark Winds. And so what I was wondering is where do you think that uncle energy comes from, right? When you get cast for these types of things, what are those male authoritative figures that you kind of think of that you're portraying so often?
Well, my uncles, you know, my grandparents lived in Browning, Montana, which is the Blackfeet Reservation. And I lived about 20 miles off out of Browning inside the national park. So my grandparents are Lakotas from Standing Rock. And they moved up to Browning back in the 50s and pretty much raised her. My mom was born in 48, so I'm a Standing Rock res, but they moved up to Blackfeet country back in the 50s. Their grandfather got a job on the Blackfeet tribe as a mechanic, so transferred up there and worked for the GSA. And so I was around my uncles growing up, and there was one particular uncle, he'll probably never see this because he doesn't, I don't think he knows how to operate a computer. Or his name was Moose, Uncle Moose. And I get a lot of my uncle vibes from my Uncle Moose. He just teased the shit out of me. He called me shit ass all the time. My grandma used to call me shit ass. That's kind of where that term came from. With shit ass was we're on Res Dogs, and I was improvising a scene, and I walked away from those kids that called them shit asses, and everybody just laughed. And, you know, shit ass became a big term that we use now on the show. But a lot of those uncle vibes come from Moose, Uncle Moose. He used to wash my mouth out with soap because I'd cuss at him all the time. I remember one time he'd come over for lunchtime because he started working for the National Park Service, and he's a mechanic. And he'd come over for lunch, lunch break, and eat with my, his older sister, my mom, and the kids. And I wouldn't eat my hot dog one day or something. He washed my mouth out with soap because I called him. I started cussing at him or something like that. But you know how within communities, uncles are always teasing the kids, and I tease the shit out of my nephew and my niece as well. And it just kind of the way I grew up, the humor within the community, and the humor about around being around Indian people, and I just drew from that, and of course the ceremonies that I grew up in, and being around my Wichashawakam, my medicine man, and being at ceremony, and the teasing that's constantly going on, and the humor and the laughing, and I just drew from that, especially for that character Big from Reservation Dogs.
So that's too funny. So you actually are the person who coined the term shit ass.
I did.
Your uncle did, and then you did.
Yeah, growing up, they called me shit ass all the time. And it just came out in an improv scene, and we stuck with it. So.
Oh, I love that. That's like everyone's favorite term. That's how everyone was saying to each other for like weeks after Reservation Dogs came out.
I went up to South Dakota last Christmas, took my mom up to Rapid City, and they had the Lakota Invitational up there, the big basketball tournament. And they brought me up there, and I couldn't walk down the street or the hallway without somebody yelling shit ass at me.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah. It is.
It's like we get it, and sometimes I don't, everybody loves those parts though, right? Because we in our communities we tease. We really, really tease. And people aren't always prepared for that. They're like, what? I thought you were such nice people.
Yeah, right.
Why aren't you praying? And we're just calling each other shit ass and yelling at each other.
And that's that's the wonderful thing about different shows that we got on in America and in Canada, is that people are seeing that humor within our cultures. They've never seen it before. And Jesus, it's 500 years, man. I mean, they've only seen us as, in a certain tropey, stereotypical way throughout media. And they still think we're like that. And we're finally telling our own stories. And these wonderful writers are writing these multifaceted, three-dimensional characters. And they're finally seeing us as that, instead of being on a horse, yipping and yelling and, dying in front of teepees or whatever it may be.
No, exactly, right? And we can get so stuck in that. So that's pretty cool to hear. I did not know that. And now we know. So, all right. I think to kind of close us out here, because we had a really good conversation and interview with Zahn here, everyone. I mean, we went from the beginning, starting with Jesus Christ Superstar, all into how he created the term shit ass, right? So it's like, we've gone on a journey here. And so thank you so much. And so many nuggets of information in there, I think, for people who are aspiring actors and performers and want to get into the entertainment industry, right? I feel this is really a good place to listen to that and take that advice and listen to that. You know, this is someone who's been in the industry, right, for probably over past 20 years, right, starting back in the early 90s until now. And I think this is something definitely to tune into if that's something you're interested in. So I think what we'll kind of do is we'll kind of close this out and ask our friend Zahn here if you have any advice or any wisdom you'd like to share with Indigenous youth who is interested in following your footsteps.
I guess the advice I would give or the suggestions that I would give, pretty much touched on in the beginning. You know, if you are serious about being an actor, if that means theater or TV or film or whatever it may be, is the focus, putting the work in, not expecting anything, and just buckling down and studying. Study. I mean, you know, when I have the time, I still go to class. I think the best place to learn is on the set, personally, but I try to stay in class when I'm not working. I've been pretty busy for the last few years, and I haven't had much time to study, but I am on the set, and I have acting coaches that I go to, etc., for auditions and on set as well. I bring a coach along with me to kind of watch the monitor and, you know, give me little nudges here and there and go this way or that way. But it's just study and focus on it. Go to school, you know, go to college and study theater. Act anywhere you possibly can. If it's a student film, if it's getting together with friends and doing scenes, the only way you're going to get better and more comfortable in your skin, and that's what it takes, is just years of becoming comfortable in your skin. I know the maturation and age, I think, has a lot to do with it as well. Taking care of yourself, loving other people, being kind to other people. I think that all adds to your skills as an actor. Being a better human being, and do it for the right reasons. I mean, if you're trying to get into it because you want to be famous and stuff like that, that I get that. I mean, I think everybody goes through that, but at some point you're going to have to put the work in, and it's not something it's a daily grind. It was for many, many years, and it still is. It's just in a different way I'm grinding, but putting the work in, I don't know how else to put it except work your ass off.
Yeah, there you go. Thank you. I feel like that's a great closing note, you know? Definitely. Really appreciate that. And thank you so much for tuning in with us here today. We really appreciate you making the time for us. This has been Hinu Josephine Tarrant and Zahn McLarnon from Here with the View with the We Are Seeds Philadelphia podcast. Thank you for tuning in, and you can find us on Apple Podcasts.
Thank you, guys.
From Here with a View, a We Are the Seeds Philadelphia podcast is produced by Michelle St. John with music by Zachariah Julian and original logo art by Jason Wiesaw. This podcast is funded in part by Independence Public Media Foundation.